Now, what an era it was, the 60s, all that peace, that love and post-war hope. It was the moment architecturally when Australia discovered that there was an environment outside those little English-style cottage windows. Oh, the world! And so, mid-century modern, that was born. Split-level houses, great plate glass windows, exposed indoor brick, feature stone chimneys. Frank Lloyd Wright with an Aussie touch. Indoors, the walls between living spaces came down, designers became playful. There were experiments in materials and detail. And then, after going out of fashion and looking a bit, well, silly for decades, mid-century modern, it's back. Annie Hastwell takes us on a tour of one of Adelaide's finest examples and finds out why it's an architecture come into its own again.
Show me around, sir.
Okay. Love this view here. I come just stand here and look at the outside when the trees all freshly shooting, it's all gorgeous.
Just complete floor-to-ceiling glass.
Yeah, and just looking at the wood and then the greenery coming in, I think it's lovely.
So this is all the new part,
this is new.
Homage to the old, though.
Yeah.
Sue Pentelow's home is vintage 1962. When she bought it 10 years ago, some friends suggested she should knock it down.
Yeah, I mentioned a red brick house with straw ceilings and they go, oh, they remember their childhood and they don't get it. They want white. They like everything white. And so some people still don't. They think, oh, nice house. But others, a lot of people now walk in and go, wow. And I think, as you say, they're getting used to their becoming more attuned to the Danish look, mid-century modern, and they realise they're starting to appreciate how nice it is. And how
classic
warm it is.
Elements in this home would have to be simple things like the exposed brickwork with some detailed brickwork.
Jock Merrigan's building design firm, Urban Habitats, worked on the 21st century makeover of this mid-century modern home.
The lovely detail of cabinetry with the oak and the western red cedar finishes, the large format windows with some intricate detailing in the windows in the specific louvered sections that are the only openable sections of them.
And the use of a cupboard as a divider between rooms?
So that you get multiple spaces, and the fact that it doesn't go to the ceiling still enables the space to feel potentially larger than what it is. And you mentioned the randomness of some of the shelving. Some people, when I speak to them, when we're designing homes for them, get really stuck on symmetry. And to me, sometimes that can distract what ultimately might be a far better outcome if there was asymmetry in it as well. And the shelving's a classic one where you throw things out of centre and potentially out of balance, and it can actually work really well and create a really interesting point of difference. And I think that's where some of the mid-century detailing is very clever, because it's well thought out. It doesn't just default to a particular simple answer. They perhaps test what might actually be the norm and do something different.
The 60s was certainly the moment when Australian architecture opened up to the outside world. So what was going on? Michael Pilkington recently helped put together an exhibition based on the work of Robert Dixon and Newell Platten, two now legendary Adelaide architects of the era who took South Australian mid-century modern in a distinct direction of its own. Michael Pilkington, architect, we're sitting in your office, which is classic mid-century modern. Can you describe this space?
This is a beautiful sunlit ground floor of a three-storey office building, designed and constructed in about 1970 by Robert Dixon and Newell Platten.
So it's a good way to start talking about what are the unique features of that particular era of architecture, because, as you say, we've got the great big window, which is almost part of the garden. What are the other features in this room that are classic mid-century modern?
I guess in a nutshell, it's truth to materials. It's using the material in the intrinsic value of that material and expressing that honestly. So there's not decoration. There's simply the beauty of the material expressed as itself. Here we're actually in a renovation of an older cottage that was on the property that had to be kept. So we've got a combination of red brick walls and rendered old hand-pressed brickwork from the start of the colony, combined with off-form concrete as a frame, and then combined with ceiling panels which are made out of hay, straw ceiling panels, and lots of western red cedar detailing and battening that is slightly reminiscent of Japan, I guess, in that sense of organising the ceiling plane.
So there's a real attention to detail in that particular era. What was driving that?
Well, if we go back to after the war, the late 40s and 50s, it was driven by a great lack of resources. There were controls on everything. So architects had to build very innovatively with very little. A whole lot of the male architects here, we're mainly talking about men, had trained in the war. Bob Dixon here had trained as a pilot. I can only project that having signed up for a war where you may not live and you didn't even actually have to fight, you came out of that thinking, whoa, that was a close shave. I didn't have to sacrifice my life. But it informs every stage of your life after that. So I think there was a strong sentiment. And you could sense it here in the 50s with the exhibition that happened. There was a major national architectural exhibition and conference. Took over part of the parklands, had this incredible construction and design emphasis. Every architect did a separate building. Was a major modernist and functionist, which really only got going in Europe, we should remember, in the 30s, if you like, late 20s, 30s. So we're talking that period. There were examples of that already here in the 30s. Then it's all on hold, and then it blossoms in the 50s and goes in a very particularly Australian direction, I think, in a way, because it's that sense of shading, ventilation, the climate starts playing a huge functional direction in what the outcomes should be, and they inform these outcomes very strongly. So it's that complete engagement with location and what the materials are, and then making an architecture out of them.
So it was a flowering. The houses are quite amazing now to look at, and there's a return of interest in it. What's driving that, do you think? What happened in between?
That's a good question too. It coincides, if we go back to the 50s, we come out of the 50s into the 60s, we've got a boom time. We've certainly got, that's well documented. We've got migration that happened after the war, flowering. We've got all sorts of things going on culturally across Australia. So architecture fits into that and finds its own way of dealing with that. People are looking back to that time, maybe. Just, it's a much more relaxed form of design, so that appeals to people these days because it's already, it's opening up, it's combining, it's maximising use. It still gives you privacy, of course it needs that, but it does give you this other way of thinking about space, and the combinations of space do come back from Frank Lloyd Wright. There's a whole raft of influence from Europe as well after the war. Alto, the alternative way of thinking about modern design, that informs these buildings big time.
Would you say it was a hopeful, open kind of architecture that reflected the times?
Absolutely, absolutely. We had a cockiness and a confidence then, and we could handle materials and do little beautiful buildings, you know. So that confidence is being rewarded now with a lot of interest. A lot of commitment to real materials is right now. You know, hand-making things is craft. All of those things are right back and confident and good. People want that, because they're sick of looking at a screen. They need the connection with nature, which is what craft gives you. Real bricks made by a press or whatever it is, a kiln, real tiles, concrete. You know, when we look back at that time, there is a very great truth to material and a simple expression of just what that material is.
For Jock Merrigan, bringing this 1960s house into the 21st century has meant a return to the building skills of those times.
There was a lot of detailing in this home where we redesigned window details probably about 10 or maybe even 15 times to get the right detailing outcome. And we got there, and you'd certainly stand in this room now in this home and you'd say this all sits really well with what was the original architecture.
There's something lovely about the warmth of the wood and the brick and even the straw.
I think it's just the rawness of it, potentially. Bringing in a lovely outside environment certainly helps. The subtle lighting with some backlighting shining up on some of the timber detailing really works. Even the lino flooring, you know, something that we don't do commonly these days, but in this home it works really well, and such a serviceable finish. We rebuilt the deck here to then sort of work seamlessly with the inside-outside levels. The extension was designed and built so that it actually floats in the rear yard. So I love, again, like Sue, I love actually standing in the garden looking back and picking up some of the little intricacies that come out of both the original architecture and the new. This home has some fantastic eaves detailing, which enables air movement to work really well to flow through the ceiling space to cool the house in summer whilst enabling it to stay warm in winter as well. Little subtle details like that that I think have got lost in more recent years. This is very much an architectural passion and style that if people get it, they're prepared to pursue it as well.
Do you see it translating into a cheaper, easier to build, quicker to build form? Is that possible, or is the detailing just too intricate and expensive?
The reality with these homes is we can create smaller, efficient uses of space with beautiful detailing. So you might not get the big is better result, but what you'll get is a much more concise, efficient, finely detailed home that I think if you were to stand in the space, you'd probably appreciate it more than if it was a larger void, just because of the and you feel comfortable with the larger void because it's just bigger, then you're missing the point.
But Jock says more and more people are getting the point, just in time for these faded gems of the mid-century to get the kind of makeover their original designers would have wanted.
In the early 2000s and late 1900s, we found a lot of clients would see a home like this and the brief would be, we want to render the walls, paint the walls, we want to pull out all the lovely timber and we want to put in white laminate and we want to do all those sorts of things. That would have been 8 out of 10 people doing that back then. Now it's completely flipped the other way around, to the extent where if I had a client that had a home like this and they were wanting to do something like paint the walls or render the walls, I would be very strongly advising them not to, or that I just wouldn't be doing it because I don't believe it's right for what is a beautiful time of architecture.
And for owner Sue Pentelo, it's those thoughtful, quirky touches of another architectural generation that make living here something special.
So now it's raining and now we're watching your favourite site.
Yeah,
tell me about it.
Yeah, the fish pond was here, built in the 60s, and they've got the lovely guttering that extends out from the veranda and pours into the pond. So now with my windows I can watch the water flowing into the pond.
You like doing that?
I love it. I can while away, sit here in my chair and just watch the water. I just love it. At night time the light goes on and it's just beautiful.
A touch of the mid-century modern there from Annie Hastwall. And this is Blueprint on RN.